Welcome, 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 Arowana. It's been a long time since we've been in conversation, and I'm so excited to continue the work in the way that Jaysa and I have discovered through the prototyping at the Movalog is where we met. And we, as a global group, have been exploring and experimenting, and it has for me the same quality as those early years, 2008, 9, 10, before any of the books were really written. And we were really in the soil together. So that's kind of the image that I'd like to share for our beginning. And it really is a deep honor to continue the work at an individual level and to find ways together to welcome more of this collective. And my purpose and practice in doing these interviews is to learn through the interview process how an individual, such as you and many others on the planet, have sustained a contemplative practice, right, in the heart, mind, and body. And that how through time that has enabled, rooted, and let move toward new growth at the social level. And so our interview process, which I have simply taken from my book, The Yoga Radicals, commissioned through the work for innovators who were working from the body in the yoga community. And now we cultivate other embodiment practices through other soils. And somehow the questions are asking for more people. So I'll read at the beginning from the Upanishad, which started out, you are what your deep driving desire is. As your desire is, so is your will. As your will is, so is your deed. And as your deed is, so is your destiny. So that was kind of the me positioning. And then here we are in this liminal space. We're right after the new moon, before the Cancer full moon. And here's the potential space. We are what our deep driving desires are. As our desires root and rise, so might our will. And as our wills are, how might our deeds become? As our deeds are, so is our destiny. And enabling a permeable container, Arowana, this is meant to come from nothing, from your natural creativity, in this moment that we share with Jaysa. And she will be, as she has been doing, listening and looking and mark-making.
Thank you very much, Ali, for inviting me and into the conversation and setting the container with such beautiful words. I really appreciate it.
So this first of seven questions, thanking the soil from which they emerge, which is the prototyping process of Presencing Institute, combined with Joseph Campbell's Thousand Faces. So this is a weaving from those contexts. So relative to the initiation and the invocation, question one, how did your inspiration arise? Where did it come from? And what do you think, feel, and sense with it?
Such an interesting question. So I don't actually ever think about inspiration. So it's a very interesting question. But there's some sense of recognition, let's say, that I felt when I first saw my meditation teacher, and that was in 1974. I was traveling across country with my then dance companions, dance company, and we stopped in Boulder, Colorado, because my very best friend at the time wanted to see Ram Dass, and we were all reading the only, I think it's called The Only Dance There Is, Ram Dass's book. And And we stopped there, and then we saw him. And then the following night, Trungpa Rinpoche was speaking, so we attended that. And then there was recognition that this was important. What he said was resonant, and I got myself a meditation cushion and started to practice then. And I've more or less been in that community ever since that, almost 50 years. So it wasn't exactly inspiration. It was just a recognition of something that provided a base in terms of a meditation practice, a way of working with my own mind, and a community of practitioners and teachings that were always, this is where I would say, inspiring or nurturing or enlivening or soothing or whatever needed to be at the moment. And I suppose art-wise, it's similar, that it's a combination of recognizing teachers as important and colleagues of to co-create work with. And then that moved into this meeting of Otto Scharmer, which was pivotal in terms of he and Peter Senge also recognized that there was something about what I had to offer in terms of what it is to make things out of nothing, improvise with other people, that might be useful to their work. And that was 20 years ago, and I'm still there. Really, so I'm inspired by vision, by the idea that there's goodness in every system and wisdom that is accessible to everyone, and basic sanity and healthiness in individuals and in groups of individuals and systems, even though there's plenty of evidence that that may not be true. The idea of that is inspiring and brings together my own spiritual tradition with the work that needs to be done in terms of providing some kind of vehicle or structures or invitations for that recognition of basic sanity and goodness in the world, in teams and in institutions. So the work is inspiring, I suppose, and the colleagues are inspiring. Yeah, I'm very fortunate in that way.
Mm-hmm. Thank you. So this landing in Boulder one day, and then finding on the next day soil and a person, Trungpa Rinpoche, one of your teachers, from my understanding, allowed, while you were moving from one context, to learn from another context, that community of people that have grown around a variety of contemplative practices within those settings. So the art and the work, and then the contemplative part being more into meditation. And so this leaping through context, which is part of this process, so that as the growth happens from landing somewhere with a recognition that it connects to something. And so this is the next question. Something got connected in you after having met people and traveling to places where things were happening. And so this next question is, although it might not be a first point of inspiration, you spoke about it as a recognition, but that the people and the activities had become inspiring, those teams, those people, those friends. And so the process of those connections is part of what grounds this second question, that through the recognition, a connection was made possible, perhaps something new. And so here is where the how does it move toward a practice that's off the cushion. And so the question in the language now is, how did you realize that something else was possible, having made that recognition, having landed and located in the community? And you came as a choreographer. And so the link from the where you had been before landing in this new context, being welcomed. I'm assuming that you were welcomed.
Can I just ask, what are you referring to actually? Are you talking about the context of presencing work or the context of...
Well, then you had a first segment, which was the Shambhala community, and then the meeting of Otto. So I'm linking those as part of your journey relative to prototyping what is now really quite visible on the planet. And so I'm trying to unpack more carefully the elements of that recognition as you landed in Shambhala and then that meeting point. So those are points of connection in your personal chronology, let's just call it. So I'm trying to stay very close to the earth in how it evolved. How did your work become more visible? And then how did it actually find place and space with others to grow and to be shared?
Mm. I've always worked in dance and started to teach dance movement in the late 1960s. So, and I'm kind of a product of the 1960s, 1970s, where ordinary movement was recognized as dance, you know, that choreographers were using pedestrian movement, and there was a crossover between visual artists and movement and dancers and writers, for that matter. There was a lot of cross-disciplinary work being made in that time. So I'm influenced by that expanded sense of dance because of the way I was trained and what was interesting to me. So I made work, interestingly enough, I hadn't looked at any of this video of work at all for over 20 years. And for some reason, recently I started to look at some of it. I'm not sure why, but it might have to do with your question. Like, how did things move from the work I was making as a dancer, which quite frankly was completely not very popular for those 20 years? How does that inform, let's say, what I'm doing now for this past 20 years? So in the essence, there isn't any difference, right? In the essence, the essential of what interests me is the same exactly. And that is, if there's not so much self-absorption and conceptual framework and historic context, and if there's not so much stuff that we call me or us in the way, not that that's not important stuff, but at any one moment of experience, there's just so much more space than identity. And I'm interested in how gesture, how mark making, how words in conversations, how do they come out of that open non-reference point, that open spaciousness? And because of the work done in movement in the early 70s, I know that that can happen collectively. I know that for a fact, because there was a time in which I really felt that we were making things that came out of openness. So that's still what the work is about. Like, how do people, individuals, duets, groups of people, how do they make what I call the true move? How do you make a move, and particularly if it's collective, that has the sort of color of person, let's say a person, but in fact is the system or the collective's expression of wisdom and innovation and compassion? Like, the focus of the interest I have in the work has never changed. Whether it was improvisational, whether it was 7th century Japanese court dance, which I did for 30 years with a teacher, or whether it's what I'm doing now, it's always the same question. It's always the same practice. It just has different, you know, some is made up and improvised, some has been the same since the 7th century, you know. It's It doesn't really matter. That's not what innovation is about. What matters is how open one's mind is and heart are to some sense of, you know, what is it that would come out of compassion and wisdom, right? Otherwise, there's no reason to be on the planet as far as I can figure out, you know, and we all want that. It's not like that's a special thing. Like nobody wants a crummy life and no one wants to destroy the planet. I mean, this may not be the truth, but this is an optimistic expression, let's say, that I think people generally don't want to be miserable and they don't want to destroy themselves and other people and the planet. Generally, most of us are like that. And yet we do. We make choices all the time that leads to results that none of us want, as Otto often says. So I'm interested in how we can shift that a little bit. And through art forms, which I think social presencing theater is, I'm not sure how it fits in yet, but I think art forms give us more room, more freedom than other forms of expression, which are also completely valid and wonderful, you know, whether it's mental health, like your area, or law, or anything, environmental justice, you know.
Thank you. The weaving through time and space of something essential, Arowana, in these different contexts, and the way in which you recognize how these contexts might relate more together. This extension of the art forms into more space is really the way I converge in terms of it being a co-initiatory moment. And that's the nature of recognition that I heard. And then more particularly, how you actually act in the world from that essential place of your, however we want to call it, true move, your care might be a word. And so this next question, set of questions, relates to this process and practice of expansion, extension, right? That it is mirrored in our individual contemplative practice, perhaps, into more spaces and places, right? So this quality of creating a landing strip, which is the language in the prototyping model out of the theory you practice, is about others. And so I'd like to hear from you if you can put together a story, a couple of sentences on, well, how did your capacity to inspire from your deepest care, right, that essential self, and to find collaborators, how did that begin to branch and fuse into whatever you might call your work now, as well as your life, and to begin to share how they might actually be able to be woven as one of the seeds for living on the planet well together now, as we transition in this time. So remembering the others, sharing the care, and then what was the quality of the connections as you understood and created recognizable patterns together from essential nature?
I'm not sure what the question is, but I think you're asking how did I find collaborators to work with?
How did they emerge, right? So finding is more external. I'm really talking about your internal process of when the next happened.
Oh,
somebody, that would create a collaborative framework.
Somebody shows up and is interested in working, and some of those click and some of them don't. I don't know how that happens. It just, you know, people hear about Theory U, right? Like now, let's just say within the last 20 years, or they work in the, you know, they come around and they take an interest in Presencing Institute and what's happening, and they, you know, they have projects of some sort, or somehow it connects, you know, that some people connect because they're just easy to work with, let's say. I don't really know. There's nothing magical about it particularly, but some of us have been around for more than one lifetime together. So you start to recognize those people. We've got work to do with those people. And yet I'd say it's difficult to work. You know, it's difficult. And again, thinking about the past, not necessarily going forward, but in the present situation, which I have incredibly wonderful colleagues and feel like I've learned a lot on how to work with people. There's also a lot of mistakes where, you know, there's difficulty in collaboration. And from the more in the past, I don't notice that particularly in these last as predominantly. So I think part of it is, again, recognizing that there's some ease to which one can make stuff with somebody, with some people. Mm-hmm. I have these two wonderful people I work with now, Angela and Manish in Presencing Institute. And during the pandemic, we had no idea what we were going to do. And then we just had to invent stuff online, which I, you know, had so much resistance to the idea that we were going to do this online. And then, you know, but that wasn't the view of Presidency Institute, and we were going to do it. And they were so much fun to work with in terms of how are we going to rethink this as a two-dimensional, as a two-dimensional situation here on a flat screen, and how are we going to coordinate what we see with how we feel with the space. And, you know, the fact is that we have no ability to notice spatial relationships, you know, distance and a whole bunch of stuff that I rely on for information. So this was a great blessing that right now that I have so many wonderful colleagues that I'm learning from. And I suppose that's the main thing, is that these are people that I, you know, there's so much to learn in life, and you can learn from everybody, you know. So the process of making or creating is also the process of being a learner. And I don't know that that's really what you asked me, what the question was. I didn't quite understand, but.
Well, it touches the elemental quality of what this process is trying to make visible. And that's about the revelatory nature of novelty. That although, as you spoke, you had resistance to the online so-called 2D, and that there were others who say, well, we must, right? They say, come on, and the book, right? And so that demand from the external team, let's call it, that called you up to meet and then have an encounter with that moment, as you're calling it, learning. And that's exactly the shape of the container of how might we all really welcome with that essential nature of embodied unknowing. And so that's really part and parcel of my hope to bring language from you about what other places and spaces was it like I really had to like jump out of how I knew my own creative process to be, and I had to adapt to another, similar to the online experience.
Yeah, I'm not sure, Ellie, that I even have a creative process. It's just I can't do anything without other people. I have like no talent myself. It always has to do with how. You know, if you work in movement, the material that you're working with is people and their bodies and their relationship to one another in the space. So it's always, you know, space and time and then these bodies, right? And so that is what living is about, right? It's how we shape space and time, whether it's a meeting or a birthday celebration for a friend or a project, you know, is some way of shaping space and time so that there's an experience, you know, from beginning to the middle to the end, and that it always, besides the beginning and the middle and the end, it's always now. So that's the frame of reference that we're always living in anyways. And something about being able to bring that view into into everyday life makes living more ceremonial, more sacred, more ordinary than not having that kind of frame of reference.
Exactly. So that's the framing of the moving from a me to a we container, that as the learning increases into these collective group contexts, that more ordinary ritualized way of daily life is what is landing in these different places and spaces, the practice groups, the organizations who are beginning to use it as a natural part prior to having the words or the actions. So that's exactly the embodied idea of what happens from the cushion and moving into the world.
Rinpoche, you know, was very, wrote a, or gave a talk, which is called Art in Everyday Life, and then wrote a book called Meditation in Action. And both of these are a big influence on me, as well as the one on culture, which is the Shambhala book. And these are always about how, you know, and they're not about just sitting on the cushion. They're about how to create a good world, a good family, a good community. So this, these are, you know, I'm highly influenced by those teachings. Yeah.
Thank you. And so here, a bit offline, how have you understood over these last years, since the period of so-called COVID lockdown, what have you noticed with individuals you're working with or groups or organizations about the importance of this context of reflective and more embodied, ritualized daily living? What has changed, if anything, in the way people are receiving the work?
I don't know. I think people are delighted to be back together in person. I'm certainly happy to be in rooms with people again. I can't say that I have heard people say or noticed myself something that I could remark on. People are glad to be with each other. And yeah, I didn't notice a big shift in myself, other than that I just never, you know, I have no discipline to get out and exercise on my own. But, and yeah, and with other people, I know that people had very profound shifts during that time. I've heard that story, but I haven't heard it from anyone particularly that I'm working with. And, you know, I think we were just more aware, you know, because of the pandemic and other things, of the gross injustice in the world, and how so many people in the world couldn't protect themselves from illness and death. And, you know, maybe it made us a little bit more able to think of other people. I hope so.
Thank you. So in this moving from a me place to a we place, and considering the context of post-pandemic and the increasing importance of movement in the human body, I'm wondering, would you have any comments about the social bodies you've worked with and how you've seen them, heard them, noticed them, recognize what it is that you spoke about recognizing in yourself? Is there any way to lift that into more of a collective awareness in our conversation today?
Are you talking about the pandemic itself?
The social bodies, the groups, the teams, the organizations that you've worked with,
right,
since before and then now.
Yeah, that's what I was referring to.
That you didn't notice a change?
Not particularly, no. You know, we were delighted to be back in touch, and, you know, we had practical things. I don't think that's what you're talking about, though, like, you know, trying to protect each other so we didn't get sick. But that's, I don't believe what you're trying to get at here.
Yeah.
I'm not sure what the assumption is here that I'm supposed to be picking up on, Allie.
Yeah. Well, that as the moving from a me place, an individual actor place happens, we're now in a multiple actor place.
Oh, you mean from being, when we were more in our houses, it was a me place. And now, oh, I see. I'm not sure it was a me place particularly. I mean, it was physically, but then we had so much awareness of what was happening with other people.
That's what I'm talking about. How did that evolve for you? Can you track back and put a few sentences together about that awareness about others while we were in lockdown.
I mean, people were dying in their droves in New York City, right? It was profound, like how what happened with the pandemic, right? And particularly for those of us in New York. And for, you know, what happened in Native reservations and with elderly people and in prisons. I mean, it was terrible what happened, right? And we had our little houses here and could more or less keep ourselves safe. So, but how that transfers to the next online workshop that I taught, I'm not sure how that transfers. You know, I think everyone was affected in one way or the other. But what I'm saying is that in the social bodies, as you refer to them, of my courses or Presencing Institute or communities or of the other context that I'm working in, people were, after the pandemic, were very glad to be back in person. And I didn't notice that the work before the pandemic in groups, let's say in workshops, and the work after the pandemic was vastly different. I didn't notice it, but it could have been, but I didn't notice that the kind of way people appeared and the quality of the work and the quality of attention in terms of the exploration of what is a social field and how do social fields shift and how do we notice that.
Yeah.
I don't notice any particular shift in either the quality or the of attention or in the ability to discern, you know, discernment from before.
Thank you.
Yeah.
No, that's a wonderful clarification. And just to be clear, from the perspective of the biophysiology of humans having an individual experience to humans in groups metabolizing that experience, the interest that I have from this collective perceptual approach is how did your mind and your heart and your body metabolize, digest, make sense of? And if it wasn't part of the conversation, that's what I hear you saying. It just wasn't part of the conversation. It had nothing to do with the movement that you were engaged in helping.
I don't remember conversations about it, maybe in passing, but not something that occupied much of the conversation. But I love this quote of Thomas Hubel's recently. I heard him say, emotions are not personal. There's nothing personal about emotion. And I love that because that is kind of how I experience that too. I experience it as personal. But I realized that it's so dependent on so much collective and ancestral and environmental stuff, you know, that it's not really personal. And that there's something about that I feel with groups is that there's, once we lighten up a little bit on how personal everything is, then there's just way more room for, you know, for a little bit of listening into what might be the sanity of the group.
Right.
Yeah.
So that's a perfect segue to really this closing part of these series of questions, because remember, as we began, the invitation was, well, what was the spark or the inspiration? You spoke about recognition. So now with this comment about depersonalizing our attachment to emotion, right, using Hubel and some of the others, it's exactly the context that I'm trying to make visible here in these interviews, because it's not part of what matters now, and it needs to be recognized in its own regard, just like the invitation to remember what Thomas Hubel said. So if that's true...
Say that again. What's not to be recognized?
It's not the thing that is what is recognizing this more essential place and space of innovation and the prototyping crystallizing. It's ballast. It's just one of the layers that gets in the way and creates stuck emotional. And it's very ordinary to spend time in the spiral of dysregulated emotions. I'm not talking about that, but it has been recognized as something that's taking up a lot of space on the planet now. And people have certain responses to it. That's not what I'm interested in here. It's just part of the context if we stay very neutral. What this next piece is all about, and maybe we get there, maybe we don't. It's really fine, whatever emerges, of course, is that this morsel, the color, the savoring, the je ne sais quoi that you spoke about, that happens through these different contexts, through different places and spaces with the work. I'm wanting to find a way to invite space for the new. And this is part of this last question, which is, how do you find yourself acting to nourish something? What are you acting to nourish, and how is it growing? Let's try it that way.
Gosh.
This goes back to, where does it come from? That was at the very beginning.
Yeah. You know, it's partially keeping in touch with people. It's like Ricardo and I are trying to do something happened where there was encouragement to work more with young people in schools with teachers, which we had done years ago, 6 or 7 years ago. We had a school project in Los Angeles, but neither of us had really worked in school since then. And that's not my area of expertise, although goodness knows we could use that with young people. So we have but something emerged as a kind of small request, but that I jumped on it and said, okay, let's see what we could do to help teachers bring more of this work into the classroom. And so we're prototyping something and using material that we made before, but offering this school an opportunity to kind of, or an invitation, if they would co-create with us, because, you know, I really haven't worked with young people for decades. And yeah, so let's just say that that's a project, that's an idea and the beginnings of something. So then it needs, you know, it needs lots of like conversations with people about how to do this. We tried to make some videos, we tried to make a slide, we got terrible feedback on it. So it's like, that's the process of prototyping, right? You try stuff out, you make mistakes, it doesn't work, you try something else. And you keep in touch with people and you keep kind of seeing whether this is really worth your time and effort to just keep doing this. Is that what you mean? I mean, that's what it is to prototype. You just keep trying to remember that you'd like to help out on the planet. Is this your work to do? Given I'll be 80 next year. And, yeah. You know, what am I doing with the last years of my life where it would be the most useful, given I have a limited amount of energy and I don't have any support system in the United States. So the only thing that seems to be perking up in the U.S. is the stuff with kids. So, you know, it's like that. You think about your life and what you have to do, and
right.
You have no budget for doing this. So you're just prototyping stuff. And I do have Ricardo to work with and, you know, keeping in touch with a variety of different people about possibility. And then some other people say, oh, this is great. You can do this. You can raise a lot of money. You can blah, blah, blah. But so that's how projects are, right? Some are bigger, some are smaller, but they're needed in the world. But I'm not sure, you know, then you have to sort of see which ones, how can I offer something that I have to offer and not offer what I don't have to offer for one reason or another. All of those things are about how to prototype and how to, you know, right now there are 20 people in that conversation of this and that and having ideas and maybe this and maybe that and maybe this. And
right.
And so then it's a matter of trying to listen but also trying to get a line through, like, what is the actual, this is not easy for me. I'm good at making stuff with people, but I'm not good at the overall, like, what's the point? I'm not very good at that point, at that part. So then it's finding other people in the conversation. Yeah. So I'm sure it's the same with you, right? It's just how we
It's very identical. It's so where I have found some utility to stay in the recognizing place, right? When the impulse of something new comes in, is that old question of, is it the future showing up in our feelings, the way the prototyping model actually invites us? And how does that spark of recognition and inspiration? And you spoke so beautifully, stay in the relational field, right? The people who can at least understand the how it moves through you as an artist on the planet with a particular offer. And that now, and this is where the complexity comes in, others want to share at an equal level for this more collaborative community movement. And that's what we're referring to when we say it's the space in between your beautiful teaching around the ma that is somehow allowing people not to know and craft a map of how it works, how you do your projects, what's the developmental process. It has to have that outcome. I'm not talking about that. We don't want that. We want that more generative capacity to be clear enough. And you just spoke beautifully into it. Somebody said, let's do some more work with children. It's the thing that lands in the United States.
Sort of, not although with given that the, you know, given that the far right is controlling all the school boards in the US, it's not the best time to be trying to do something around our project, which is called Being Together. Not exactly the timing is not good, but you know, so there's going to be no social emotional learning in school shortly, probably, given the way things are going. And so one would have to frame what we're doing in a completely different way, which, you know, is a challenge and all of that. But the thing about collaborative and people doing their own I think the reference that you said, people feel like everything should be co-created these days. And that is the work that we're doing. I think it's a funny thing about, it has to do with like essence and style or something like that, right? And it has to do with trustworthiness for me. And, you know, people can, like in social presencing theater, a person like Laura Pastorini, completely different style, completely different approach. She does it in Latin America, where I don't speak the language. I didn't grow up under dictatorship. I have no idea what it's like to have, you know, I'm not from Latin America. And she and Vivi take this and they make what works there. And it's not, or Daniela, right? It's not at all like I would do it, but I have complete faith in their integrity as human beings, and that and they know when what is essential and what can be shifted. And so they basically do everything in Latin America. I have no say in that. I pop in every once in a while when they invite me. You could say the same thing for China in a funny way. I don't go to China anymore. And, you know, I don't really know what they're doing there. But you know, Jace and Tess, they do something there and it seems fine. So I'm very interested in people just taking their region and doing what they can in their regions. And they keep in touch. It's like they're not like disappear. They show up to the PI things. They're doing for, you know, projects with PI. They tune into 2X. They, you know, their students go to ULEP. So there's a connection that they're not like, you know, just off in their own bubble somewhere. But
right,
I think that's how real collaboration works, is that people don't whine about why they're not being recognized. They just go ahead and do something. And they do something that has integrity and, you know, it's fantastic. So I think that kind of, then there's real collaboration, you know, then we can have conversations about what they're making. And if I'm helpful, I can say something. And if not, you know, but it's a certain kind of maturity, maybe you would say, you know, that that many, like yourself, many have this kind of, you've been around and you know the material and you tune into PI's world. And so then there's this integrity to it, and for people to start their own. I mean, Movilog is a great example, right? I thought it was a great thing this year. You know, rather than just popping in for my 15 minutes of cheering people on, I just decided to do it. And I've got to tell you, it was a terrible amount of work. And I don't know whether I'll ever do that again, just because it was so much work to put it together. But, you know, it was a really inspiring, really one of the most inspiring things that happened all year. And our only sad thing was that the timing was such that it was very difficult to keep coordinated, because, you know, you're designing your own thing and you've got these little time slots where you're supposed to fit into everybody else's thing, and which for us was just not possible when you have four different artists collaborating. Right. We had four people making this, and then we had to also coordinate with the timing. And so this didn't really work that well for feeling like we were connecting in to the whole thing. Certainly as a unit and having something happen in the US, it was one of the best things that I have been at all year. I just really learned a whole bunch of stuff, and it was just completely magical what happened, even though these people didn't know each other. I knew all three of them, but they didn't know one another.
Oh, no kidding. Oh, wow.
Barbara and Beth had never met before, and Edinson and Beth and I had worked on a project before, but Edinson didn't know Barbara at all. So it was like,
wow. I think that really captures the energetics, that nobody knew each other, but there was a soil that was shared, and that there was some capacity to continue at that essential level, even with the time zone problems, to create something that I'm hearing you promote as best. I mean, so there is an evaluative structure to what is emerging. And so then the question naturally emerges, what made it good? You know, what made it exciting? What was it?
The people. I mean, Barbara and I have worked together for 40 years, so I'm very familiar with the forms that she does and whatever. Beth and I have worked for at least 20 years together, even though the aesthetic is completely different, the two of them, and the way they approach everything couldn't have been more different. So it was the fact that they're incredibly skilled, and they've had, you know, they've been in, both of them, and doing what they're doing for decades and decades and decades in all sorts of situations, like myself. So partially is that, and partially is that it was an incredible gathering of people, many of whom were already, you know, had already done year-long SPT programs. And they were very experienced, and that helped. The fact that we had quite a bit of meditation, and that kind of, that helped. And that we just had time slots. We didn't have to coordinate. We just said, this is what we do in the mornings. This was based on the arts residencies that we did in Mexico. We had the same kind of schedule. It had time slots. And so people had their slot. And then magically, the whole thing, you know, is coordinated enough that it ended up in this collaborative performance. So it had to do with the skill level of the people that were gathered, for one thing. And these two women are, you know, they're masters at what they do. And they were willing to do it, you know, all of us, for no money, and just because we wanted to see how it would work. So it was, you know, it was also... you know, not actually work. I mean, none of us got paid to do this. So that might be a good example of something, but I'm not sure how, you know, that would work for every group. It happens to work for this group because we have so many years of experience together. So we don't have to start over with how we're going to work, that we could trust that things would come together. And then, you know, Beth had her colleague coming from Spain, who was an amazing, amazing person, who Edinson translates for, and they have a theory hub or group, something. So yeah, it was just magical in a funny way.
And so interesting that we, I'm sorry, go.
And Antoinette was there also, so that she really helped out with some things. You know, it was really fun. I mean, it was a funny situation because we had this one woman who didn't have a clue what was going on, this Russian woman. And she was absolutely amazing. She, you know, she just, I don't know how she, I think there was some vague connection between her and Anastasia, but it was vague, right? And she'd never been to anything like this. She didn't know anything about social presencing theater, presencing institute, nothing. She was really amazing. I mean, she regaled us with hysterical stories, but just as a participant, she was just such a breath of fresh air.
So
you'll see in the book that Beth made, you know, from the Movalog, that David made, that this one Russian woman doesn't have, she isn't represented there because she just never responded whatsoever to anything. Yeah. So Beth put her picture in at the end, her thing that she made, but there was no response whatsoever. She was just a blip in our life, but she was really spiced things up. She was the one thing.
There's our energetic of the new, right? That somehow there's some potential space that's really being activated. And that's the whole container, Arowana, that this moving into your care at such a deep level as a mature integral practitioner on the planet, and that all these other things are happening. It's your classic, you know, distribution of innovation, and each part of our world is picking up their culture and bringing that same essential, whatever we want to call it, but the container wants to be recognized. That's basically the idea behind these interviews, that there's something traveling through the time and space of these questions that is that revelatory creation space that we know from the ancient traditions. It's how it emerges. And so to dig in and, you know, ask again, and, you know, Kitty's here with us, and just to contribute again to this turning of the soil. And so I'm just wanting to come to a close, you know, in high level gratitude. I've wondered during this last bit if Jaysa has a question that's emerging, because sometimes it's very exciting to see what comes, you know, at the end.
I don't have a question. I just have gratitude, and I am very honored in being here. Thank you. I just wanted to ask Arowana, where is her piano that I can see today? Because I love
it. Where is it? Say again.
I can't see your piano today.
Can you see it? It's kind of dark already here.
Ah, okay. Yes.
It's still there, and I hardly have time to play, and that makes me sad.
Well, I hope we've played a little bit to kind of oxygenate the soil and metabolize some of these years. And Jaysa, I know we want to close soon. Are you ready to share?
Yes. Yes.
Oh, I love that.
Thank you.
Oh, it's beautiful.
I've never seen you use orange before.
It's such an important word in orange now. I love it that's right in the middle. And then wisdom and compassion are coming out of it. Oh, I love that. Yes, it's so beautiful.
Thank you.
And I love the little figures that are kind of dancing and, making their own kind of movements there. I love that. The other thing I really love is how that it has a kind of, you know, it's almost these days, it's like inappropriate to be, to recognize joyfulness or something like that because of how dark it is in the world. But I love this, that there's joyfulness and playfulness in this. And yet it has a kind of rootedness. The people have roots. And I really, it's just beautiful. Thank you so much.
This emergence, right? The movement upwards from the base. That's right.
It's beautiful.
Thank you. Thank you. Thank you.
Thank you for just joining and doing that. That was so beautiful.